You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the Dan Le Batour Show with the Stukats Podcast.
Anything about saving yet or not yet?
I'll work on it.
That'll be Saban's post-game speech tonight.
I'm not going to be the Miami Dolphins head coach. What more do you want from me on that?
I hope someone asks him that. That'd
Let's go
so
full
great.
Circle. Yes.
Just for that.
According
clip.
To reports out of
someone,
Miami.
Please, someone out there covering this game today.
Yes.
Please
ask him.
Put him in that position. Send us a Zoom link and we'll jump in there and ask the question ourselves.
Greg. Greg, can you get in the Zoom?
Can you get into the Zoom on the national championship game and ask Nick Saban if he's going to be the next coach of the Miami Dolphins?
Yeah, I sure will.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Count on it.
You should. We need to put you in there. That's a legitimate question to ask. And we want to point out to you over the last couple of months, you may have noticed that the insider trading that is done by these NFL reporters, because this is an economy. You've heard me say before, there are more NFL information guys than there is NFL information. A lot of people have sprouted around this economy, and now they are all reporting that Harbaugh is not lined up. There is some Rooney Rule stuff here. You have just fired a successful black coach, and you've done it quickly. Matt Rule's getting a couple of years in Carolina. Matt Rule has not reached expectations and has a crazy owner. Brian Flores has been fired faster than is merited, given the results. And now all the NFL reporters are reporting some version of what it is that has been reported about Harbaugh not being lined up yet. Ian Rappaport is saying that Brian Flores was a significant reason why Deshaun Watson wanted to be in Miami. With Flores out, this situation may have changed. I am here to tell you that ahead of all of these NFL insiders, Poppy Lebitard reported last night, immediately after the 4:30 games, that Flores needed to go. So that is a Poppy exclusive. Wow. He said, clear everyone out, though. He wanted everyone fired. Greer is still in charge. And Greg Cody is rushing to write a column now. What are you going to write? Do you know what it is that you're going to write?
I'm very likely to rip Stephen Ross to a degree I seldom do with any coaching change. I think it's a terrible, reckless, premature, wildly premature dismissal that cannot be justified under any circumstances. With all due respect to Poppy, whom I love, Brian Flores was on nobody's hot seat list.
That's not true, actually. At 1-7,
yeah.
At
yeah.
1-7,
I'm talking
he was.
About now. I'm talking about
well,
now.
It is weird. They didn't lose for 2 months, and they won what, 7 of their last 8, or was it 8 right. of their last 9? They finished 9-7.
And even at 1-7, by the way, there was nobody who knows the team who thought he was in any jeopardy whatsoever. Even at 1-7.
My bad. They're 9-8. I got to get used to that new schedule and that new math.
I will say, this is obviously a stunner. None of us were expecting it, but one of the best information guys on television, Jay Glazer, yesterday flatly said Brian Flores is safe. This was either a very closely guarded secret or something that happened overnight.
Well, it couldn't have been what happened yesterday when they beat Belichick. When he beat
he
again.
He was undefeated against the Patriots.
When Flores again beat Belichick.
Right. First time they've swept New England since the year 2000, I believe, or it might have been 01. Yeah, I mean, it cannot be justified. There was no inkling in the press box after the game yesterday. Nobody was asking Flores, hey, do you feel in jeopardy at all? That didn't even come up. It was not even a line of questioning or a line of thought that this guy, to his future, yes, but Flores' immediate future with the team, that was not any point of conjecture at all.
We have been remiss in not talking about that Chargers-Raiders game last night, a timeout. A lot of people are enjoying making fun of Brandon Staley today. I feel like Billy has never been more interested in football than he was with the Brandon Staley timeout situation. And Brandon Staley, numbers God, getting a comeuppance.
Well, I mean, he cost them the playoffs, right? Like, you guys will tell me how the numbers say that he's right, even though his team didn't make the playoffs and how he should have done that and all that jazz. But yeah, he cost his team the playoffs, if not this game in the game against Kansas City when he elected not to kick three field goals and they lost, because that win would have gotten them into the playoffs. He went for it on 4th and 1 at the 18-yard line, giving the Raiders 3 points. Like, he's a little too cute with the level of talent that his team has. Don't be that cute when you're not that good.
I'd actually go and say that Brandon Staley is responsible for his team not making the playoffs, but not for the reason that everyone talks about, because everyone is focusing on these fourth down decisions. Look, even after going for it 4th and 1 at his own 18, they got to overtime. The reason why they're not in the playoffs, because they're the worst run defense in the league, and this is the guy who came in as Sean McVay's defensive coordinator. Like, their run defense is appalling. You can talk about the timeout if you want at the end of the game with 38 seconds left, but it was 3rd and 6, and they ran the ball. And if they stop Josh Jacobs there, the clock runs out, it's a tie, and that's the end of the game. He called a timeout to get a defensive formation on the field, and they couldn't stop him.
Justin Herbert converted, what was it, 4 straight 4th and
six
longs?
6 out of 7.
Crazy.
And this is what is the greatest indictment today, that you can lay right there at Brandon Staley's lap. He's got the best quarterback who's not in the playoffs.
Yes. Of all the first-year coaches, he inherited by far the best situation.
But his quarterback kept bailing them out last night on 4th and long again and again. There is no team in the league that is not playing in the playoffs that has a quarterback that's as good as the one that one has. If you have a quarterback that good, you are in the playoffs. Because if you look at what Russell Wilson did this year, Russell Wilson was not Justin Herbert.
The plays specifically, like, he was bailing out some of these questionable decisions with special play. Justin Herbert was just on that 2-point conversion, let alone the insane throw that he made on the 4th down. I think he had 100 yards, 6 of 6 passing attempts on 4th down alone, but he made something out of nothing. I was screaming at the TV, why are you going for it on 2 here? Just have faith. And I think sometimes he's too married to the numbers because it's not taking into account the feel of a game, the pressure involved with the game. It ended up working out, the decision to go for 2, but he totally played himself on that timeout. He was asked specifically why, because Derek Carr gave voice.
Give people the context. For people who weren't watching the late game, you have to understand that the Chargers could be in the playoffs. There's no disputing what Billy's saying. If their coach doesn't call timeout, the Chargers are going to be in the playoffs with, what was it, 38 seconds left.
Well, he does push back on that notion. So, yeah, we were headed towards a draw, which would have kept the Pittsburgh Steelers out of the postseason. And you could kind of tell. Everyone was looking. The one sideline was looking at the other sideline. Players were slow to get to the line, but players weren't even really bending down for some of these plays. And Brandon Staley calls timeout. And that totally changed the complexion of what was going on. Now, here's in Brandon Staley's defense, he was asked about the mindset. Derek Carr had already said, yeah, the timeout changed our mindset. The Raiders staff lent their voice to, yeah, it changed our approach on this. Here's what Brandon Staley said to defend his decision to call a timeout there.
Brandon, you took a timeout there with 38 seconds left before the 3rd and 4. Why did you take a timeout there?
Yeah, we needed to get in the right grouping. We felt like they were going to run the ball, so we wanted to get our best 11 personnel run defense in, make that substitution so that we could, you know, get a play where we would deepen the field goal.
Derek Carr said after the game that timeout changed their mentality. Do you think that had any reason to do with them?
I don't think it changed their mindset because they were going to run the ball on the play before, and then they ran the ball the very next play. So we wanted to make sure that we got our run defense in there, and we obviously didn't execute well enough, but we wanted to get our premium one-back run defense in here, and that's what we did.
Was any part of the motivation for you saving time to potentially win it if they were to miss that field goal?
My mindset was to make the field goal as long as possible.
Again, calling a timeout to get your best 11 out there who represent the worst rush defense in the league to get out there.
He's taken this being never wrong thing to another level where he just said Derek Carr lied to you. I'm right.
But did Derek Carr lie? All he said was it changed the strategy. He didn't say it changed whether we wanted to play to win or play to tie. Because if you look at it from the Raiders' point of view, if the Raiders tie the game, they have to go back to Kansas City, a team that they've lost to by, I don't know, 4+ touchdowns in their last 2 matchups. Whereas if they won, now they have a little bit of an easier path going to Cincinnati, where they're only a 6-point underdog.
Yeah, but Brandon Staley gave the coaching staff more time to chew on that. The Raiders head coach said, yeah, it was a discussion on the sideline during that. And with all due respect to Brandon Staley, mindset's an intangible thing. He's pointing to the results saying, well, they were going to run either way, and we wanted our best run defense in there, and the fact that they ran again didn't change their mentality. You don't know what their mentality was. They're actually speaking to what their mentality was. You can't say, no, you're wrong, to Billy's point. He's calling them liars. That game would have ran out.
But at no point did anyone on the Raiders say, like, yeah, we were going to play for the tie on the last drive. They mentioned, like, yeah, we thought about it. Yeah, like, Derek Carr mentioned the strategy, but, like, no one ever said that. I know you can't, like, explicitly say that because maybe then there's NFL investigations or congressional investigations like I was calling for last night when I thought the Raiders were going to kneel down for the tie. But I think what Brandon Staley did was the right thing there. I think he was just trying to get their better personnel on the field, and their better personnel still not very good. They didn't execute on third down, and therefore the Raiders had an easier field goal opportunity and won the game.
I don't know, though. That game had a feeling of inevitability. We're heading for a draw because Las Vegas ran a couple run plays. They didn't go anywhere. It was third and seven. They were going to hand the ball off. It really felt like with 38 seconds left, they're outside of field goal range. We know what's happening here. And the timeout gave them a chance to, all right, let's call a good run play. Let's go get a first down. Let's go. Like, the game had a feeling this is grinding to a screeching halt. We've killed each other for 69 minutes. Let's call this a day.
Nice.
You rarely get a situation where Collinsworth and Al Michaels are that apoplectic and confused and bewildered. That leads some of this, okay? And all of us, I think, had some version of that reaction, but broadcasters do lead that stuff. They give you permission when they're talking in ways they usually don't talk at the end of a crazy day and a crazy season where I ask you again, are the Raiders for real?
Hell yeah, they are. And I think you could tell, like the announcers were saying, what do you do here? The players in the trenches were giving off, what do we do here? And Brandon Staley gave the Raiders an opportunity to talk about what they're going to do there with the players. It's one thing to have someone in your headphones while the game is going on and you're running all the scenarios. You give that game a breather and people can talk out scenarios. Well, let's draw up our best run play. We're going to run regardless, but let's be a little bit more aggressive. Guys, we have a breather in the trenches. You have 30 seconds here of a breather to get your best effort here, and let's try to win this damn thing. Brandon Staley absolutely played himself last night.
I want to make a prediction. The way this season, regular season, ended is going to cause the NFL to finally abolish tie games. Because the idea that two teams tying in the final game of the regular season, the idea that was even a possibility, that would have kicked out Pittsburgh, who also tied a game earlier in the season and denied Ben Roethlisberger his curtain call, is just patently ridiculous. Tie games should never have this kind of weight on a season. And it's so easy to abolish tie games. End it like the colleges do. Just do something. No more ties.
But this was such a weird scenario to begin with for the Steelers because the Jaguars had to beat the Colts. And I don't think the NFL is going to change the rules because they got one of the most watched Week 18 Sunday night football games. Like, it was meaningful no matter what the outcome was, win, tie, or loss. It was meaningful for the entire rest of the playoff picture. And it made it more exciting that this weird, batshit crazy scenario could play out and impact the entire playoffs. I think it made it more exciting.
Well, you know what made it meaningful and exciting and well-watched was the idea that it should have been winner-take-all is what's exciting. Winner-tie-all is not exciting. The idea that it could have ended in a tie.
But it was exciting, Greg. That's what made it exciting, was that if they both kneeled down in the overtime, that it would have been an outcome we've never seen before.
Okay. I'm with you. I'm with her, Greg. It did make it more exciting. And like you watch that game and you're like, well, they need to change this because
winner take all is
no.
Exciting.
That was we're just as much as an expert at what to do in that situation as Brandon Staley. You know why? Because no one's ever been in that position. That's great to see something that you've never seen before in a sport that with that kind of history.
I'm excited. It's time to fix the NFL ties. I have two submissions for you guys. Give a little think, see what you guys think. The first one, not super popular. Dr. Pepper challenge. That's how you decide who wins the game. The second one, and this one I feel like is going to be a little bit more controversial. You put 60 seconds on the clock. You have one kicker from each team on opposite sides of the field. For 60 seconds, you just kick as many field goals as you can, and you count all of the points, and you see who it is that wins.
I like your first idea better than giving the kickers more power. Just an obstacle course of just put the quarterbacks out there and let them throw footballs at targets. I'm with that idea a little bit more. After an overtime, if you're still tied, okay, bleep it. We're not going to end in a tie.
Everyone's saying how exciting last night's game was. It's not that exciting if they just kneel the ball the entire game.
Hard disagree.
What I wanted was them to do that, to start the game. All right, we're looking at each other.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that the Manning cast of social media, if you were just listening to people losing their mind at kneeling for 3 hours, would be so entertaining.
Imagine them doing it, and then it's fourth quarter, 2 minutes left, the Raiders have the ball, and they do like a fake kneel, and all of a sudden it's like, screw it, and it's like, we don't want to go to Kansas City. We've been lying the whole time. That's actually what I wanted to
happen. Brandon Staley took a bunch of shit. Rich Bisaccia actually like could have potentially put himself in a situation where a blocked field goal is going the other way and he loses, and we're calling him a bozo for trying to kick a 48-yard field goal to win the game. He honestly, you're in the playoffs, take the knee. But and the idea that it's the NFL.
What is this take?
Well, yeah, the take is that
there's going to be a kick six.
Yes,
that's
not a possibility from that distance. 48 yards. Yeah. Of course, it's a possibility.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
It's a very small possibility.
Very small. It's a possibility.
I think you have to play your probabilities there.
No, there's a 100% chance that you make the playoffs if you just take a knee. 100% chance.
I'm not getting off of that.
Yeah, going to Kansas City.
These are also like psycho NFL coaches. They don't play to tie. Like, they're all hardwired that like losing or tying is like the worst thing in the world.
But they also like killed themselves. Like, they are considerably worse for having played that game that hardly on Sunday night. Like, the Chargers were dead. The Raiders were dead in overtime. Exhausted. And that fourth quarter drive, they couldn't move.
But Sacha did make his intentions clear, though. He was asked before the game about if this scenario presents itself, and he went on the record saying, we got to do what we can do to get into the playoffs. That's the main thing. And I'm really shocked that Brandon Staley didn't take that time out to just make nonverbal contact with Bisaccia on the other sideline, because I honestly thought that must be the only reason.
It had to be eye contact between the two of them.
Yeah, He had to pour two fingers into his own eyes
and then two fingers.
Yeah, I would have taken the time out, just put my hands on my knees and look straight at the Raiders head coach. What are we doing here?
I've got a couple of things that have to be put on the table. One is, after that ending to that regular season, Greg Cody wanting to fix the rules is funny. After that dramatic ending, another thing I want to add, if you kneel all game, there's no one going out of bounds. There are no timeouts. You lose your commercials. You lose. That game goes an hour and 40 minutes.
No, there's change of possession, though. Listen, the NFL is getting their commercial breaks in. Come hell or high water.
Yeah.
And then there's this. Greg is in today, at least in part, because we can't find Stu Gatz. Now, John Mayer tested positive as the lead singer for the Grateful Dead. He did not sing in Mexico. The Grateful Dead then did not perform at all because of a COVID outbreak in Mexico. Stu Gatz is still in Mexico, but God damn it, if from the beyond, we don't get to say he's been talking about the ties for 2 years, saying those ties are important. I believe, who was it? It was the Steelers tied the Lions, the worst team in the league, but they did not lose. And he was right. That goddamn tie was important.
And Stu Gatz was right? Holy Stu Gatz was right.
It's infuriating. It's infuriating.
Also, the answer is not ban ties. The answer is ban Sunday night football in the final week of the season. Have every team kick off at the same time. This is how they do this in soccer leagues.
This is such a soccer thing.
Yeah, it is. No, it is. The NFL's done this before.
I think baseball does it now on the final day of the season.
Final day of the season, every team kicks off at the same time. You can scoreboard watch, but you're not catering your results to a game that happened two nights earlier. You're just playing the game and you're trying to figure it out, but like, they were handed a scenario where they could just tie and both teams would get in. And only their competitive spirit was the reason why they played out this game.
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please. Which would you have preferred to see last night? The game the Chargers and Raiders played, or the Chargers and Raiders kneeling anarchy 0-0 time? Because because of the funny anarchy, I want the second choice, but I wouldn't go around fixing anything about football because of what I saw last night. They flexed the most important game. That was the game that had the monster stakes on it, and it was an indisputably great watch. Like, you cannot, how much better would you like the regular season to end than the way that it ended?
It would have been exactly the same had you eliminated the tie scenario scenario and just made it winner take all.
It was a good game. I'm actually with my dad on this. I don't think we're saying this today. If there's, I know it's funny. It's funny if they just kneel the ball, but we're not in here saying, well, wasn't that amazing? It's the best. You guys are talking about it. It's the best finish of a game ever. That doesn't happen if they just kneel the ball.
Because the tie was a looming possibility, and I was rooting for it. Also, 32-32 score Agami. I was very disappointed.
Can I also raise a scenario where the game ends in a tie last night, whether it's kneel downs or in the overtime, like it looked like it was going to be, and then Ben Roethlisberger wakes up on Monday morning and he's like, shit.
That's amazing. What are you talking about? This is a glorious situation.
No, I agree. That would have been hilarious. I'm not saying it's bad. Like, can you imagine if that happened, though?
So great,
like, that's
though.
It.
If Roethlisberger went to bed and woke up retired and didn't even, like, just fell asleep watching, it'd be like getting the swap helmet in our bucket of death.
Just like
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Levitard.
I don't want your beak leaning over the plate.
Stugatz.
Step back, Jack.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Hey, Jason, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. You're a Killian guy. I live steps from Killian. Sure. I had no idea you had all these Miami ties. I'm a Golden Cane. We got to get you boosting and donating to the great University of Miami program.
What kind of introduction is that? Well, I'm a just, Golden
that
Cane.
That did not take long.
Here's the thing, Jason.
If you had over-under for 6 minutes.
Hello or no?
I don't know if you heard Nick Saban's comments out there, but I'm out there in these streets. A lot of South Florida bag men, all right? And I'm calling everybody to the table right now. We need you. We need Bezos.
You're meeting him right now for the first time. None of us have talked to him, and you're asking him for money for the program already?
He hasn't even responded to hello yet.
I already gave a bunch of money to University of Miami, by the way.
Okay.
Wow.
My dad worked there. Yeah, your dad retired last April after almost 40 years.
Wow.
He was a college professor.
All right. How so what are you that? Doing for 2022? Can I put you down
for
another 20?
Can we back off for a second? We didn't introduce him the way that I want to introduce him, which is, let's go.
The king of the kings. The king of the kings.
The king of the kings.
D-K.
We have never spoken. We have never spoken. So it's nice to meet you, Jason. Thank you for the maiden voyage that you're making on the program. I've been wanting to talk to you about the business because I'd like to understand the business and your story. So thank you. Well, just thank you generally, but also thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. I grew up reading you and Greg and everybody else in the Miami Herald. So it's a thrill to be on.
Tell us about the Killian days. Tell us, were you trying to explore market inefficiencies when you were in high school and Moneyball had not yet come out?
I was always interested in business. In the beginning of high school, I wanted to be a lawyer until I realized how much reading you have to do. And then I kind of soured on that. And then I got into business. I think I was probably more interested in the inefficiencies between, way that the different classes would be structured and being able to do my homework in one class. So I didn't have to do it at home and then, sleeping in other classes. So that was my senior year at Killian, was trying to figure out how to not have to do as little homework at home as possible. And I think I was pretty successful at that.
You didn't envision this though, right? Like this became a vision to you where along the path. What were you thinking as a business person that you were going to build?
I always had an entrepreneurial drive. In all seriousness, I did try to start little businesses in high school and college. And especially, you know, around when I was in high school and really late middle school is when the internet started to come about and I got really into it. Then I went off to college and I was all, you know, excited about the idea of becoming an internet entrepreneur. In fact, I thought about dropping out of school and moving out to the Bay Area until my dad put the fear of God in me. And thankfully he did, because about a year or two after that, the bubble burst. Finally, after a few more years there in corporate America, I said, you know, no excuse timing wise. Now I'm going to do it. I pulled Matt aside and said, we got to come up with something. My third co-founder, Paul, who we met there, I brought him into the loop. And three of us just kind of brainstormed and, you know, batted around probably 30, 40 terrible ideas. And then finally, Matt came to me one day with this one. And I thought it, you know, right away, I was like, this is it. But I'm a huge fantasy sports and sports fan in general. So my initial instinct was, hey, you know, what am I thinking this is too, you know, too good just because it's me and it's my, I'm the target demo. So we went and did some research and eventually figured out this is the thing to do. And we spent the next, I don't know, 8-9 months working late nights after work, weekends. We'd wake up at 6 a.m., go to Paul's spare bedroom in Watertown, Massachusetts. Work through the evening. We do the same thing, 7-8 o'clock after work. So we're putting in, you know, 100-hour weeks. Finally scrounged together some money from some VCs and the rest was history.
Do you remember early on what the second, third, and fourth option were on the bad ideas when the bankers are trying to figure out how to get out of the banking business? Like, what were the other close things? Because it sounds like you almost made a couple of really disastrous decisions with your future at bad times.
Well, funny enough, one of the things, and I did try to do this, and it was just, it, you know, it's a hobbyist thing, not a business I learned, is we tried to start a fantasy sports analytics site. I did that with two other friends, and it's not a huge market, right? I mean, there's people that'll do it, but to be able to build a big business out of just number crunching on the internet for purely fantasy sports players probably wasn't the biggest idea. And I mean, there were so many other bad ones we came up with. We thought about trying to go open a restaurant chain, fast food chain. I mean, not that that's a bad idea. Plenty of people do well with that, but that wouldn't have been something I would have been able to be successful with. We were, you know, we were internet guys and I think we landed in the right place.
Jason, I'm the one who should start a fantasy analytics firm because Greg's Lobos just won the PFPI Fantasy League Championship, nice. Which is unbelievable. Congrats. You would be interested in, I mean, Jamar Chase, Rookie of the Year and MVL, Most Valuable Lobo. It's unbelievable. But I'm wondering, you tried in elementary school to start a chess club. And I'm imagining that's got to be an uphill climb, right? Because everybody in elementary school can barely play checkers.
He didn't
like chubby
try.
Checker.
He succeeded like
did
chubby
you?
Checker.
Like
there were a few. There was one other guy, another Miami guy named Jared Brown that was my rival. He and I would play all the time. It was always him and me in the finals. So there were a few of us who would play. It didn't make me the coolest kid in school, but definitely was a fun hobby. I still play chess. I love chess.
Where's he at now?
Yeah.
Let's call out Jared. Where's Jared
this Brown
now?
Character?
What's Jared doing these
days?
So
I think he's in Miami, actually, or he's somewhere around there.
He's not the CEO of DraftKings. I can tell you that.
Check in the gutter.
You are a sports dork then. You grew up, you wanted to do the fantasy analytics, but there weren't billions of dollars in fantasy analytics, but you were just dorking out on sports stuff throughout your high school, throughout your childhood, throughout the Ron Frazier baseball camp.
That's right. Well, I thought for like many kids do for a time, I'm going to be a player. I'm going to play baseball or football or basketball. And you know, you get to a certain age, I don't remember exactly where it was, where suddenly somebody, a coach, somebody has the heart to tell you you're not that good. And then it all clicks and you're like, wait a minute, I'm probably not going to be able to be a professional baseball player. And then I suddenly said, all right, well, I am very interested in statistics and I seem to be better at math than I am at playing on the field. So I used to study the box scores. I would read your columns, both you guys, and then I'd study the box scores and I'd memorize all the numbers and my dad and my mom would quiz me and I found that to be strangely fun. So that was when I first realized I'm a numbers guy, I'm a statistics guy, and that's what I'm destined to do.
Explain to me the light that went off when you said, okay, this is what we need to be doing. Is it because, okay, this is the realm that I'm interested in and I think that there might be money in it? Or you saw immediately, wait a minute, there's dollars all over the place here.
You know, actually, I never thought I was going to do something I have personal interest in. In fact, that was at first something that worried me. I worried, am I too excited about this idea? Do I think it's bigger than it is just because all my friends and me are into this stuff? And, you know, everybody, when it's your group, you feel like everyone in the world's doing it and it feels bigger than it is. So that was actually a concern I had at first. And I also thought I might be biased by my own preferences, you know, getting the product that I want instead of the product that the general public wants. But what I've realized is in this business, and it's not true of all businesses, but in this business, it actually really helps because there is community. There is a sort of, you know, really deep engagement that happens with customers in these products. And so really understanding who the customer is and really understanding what the experience is like and being into the products enough to try them and play them yourself actually really helps.
Can you take us through the fear along the path? Because you are making big bets again and again and again. So where were the nights that kept you up?
Well, at first it was, you know, how do we prove that we can build a real company and raise that next round of capital? Because when you're dependent on investor money and you're always checking the bank and every month is a month closer to running out of cash, you're dependent on somebody saying, hey, I think this is going well enough that I'm going to put some more money in. And if they say no, you're done, no matter what you think. So that was the first fear. And then, you know, that evolved to how do we beat the competition? We were in a real big battle with FanDuel in the fantasy sports world. And, you know, that was a real existential fight, it felt like, because they were just intent on trying to put us out of business. And eventually we got bigger than them. And so that was a real accomplishment. But in doing so, we ended up attracting a lot of regulatory attention. And there was a period of time in late 2015 where we had regulators coming after us. You know, there were articles being written about investigations. And suddenly I went from, hey, I'm so proud of this company to, you know, people would say, what do you do? And I'd almost be, you know, worried. And I'd say, oh, DraftKings is like, ooh, it doesn't seem to be going so well. So all of a sudden, you know, a lot of the other stuff, the competition, the capital, all felt small when you're, you know, being personally threatened and when your livelihood's being threatened and people are accusing you of things, you know, you didn't do. And eventually we got that all figured out, thankfully. And, you know, feels like a lifetime ago, but it's funny because that experience, it actually makes everything sort of, you know, puts everything in perspective. No matter how hard it gets, no matter how, you know, difficult a day I have, I can always draw upon that and think back to, you know, those tough times. And really, it just puts everything in perspective and gives me a lot of, you know, kind of confidence that if we got through that, we can get through anything. And what was also amazing is our employees all stuck by us. You know, we didn't have anybody leave. We had everybody still very excited to stay there, and everybody believed in the mission of what we were doing. And that also gave me confidence that if you can inspire people through the darkest of days to keep going, you know, then you're going to keep very loyal, very hardworking employees for a long time.
Where does rationalizing paying Sugatz $50 million rank on your darkest days?
Yeah, sleeping. Had trouble sleeping.
Well, you know, it's definitely up there. I'll tell you that.
Yes, I would assume so.
Could be.
Can you tell us what it is that you're trying to accomplish? I mean, is it conquering? Is it what's the end game, Spence?
Well, I'm an entrepreneur. I mean, I'm not somebody that likes to just manage things to steadiness. I want to see this grow. I want to get bigger. I want to, you know, make money for our investors. That's very important to me. A lot of people have believed in us and you know, bought in, and you know, even with ups and downs of our stock price, those that have stuck by us and believed in our long-term mission, you know, I want to prove them right and make sure that they are really happy with the investment they've made. I want our employees to feel like they have a fulfilling place to work and that their careers are growing and that they're part of an exciting thing that's, you know, changing the world in some way. And I don't mean to overstate what we're doing when I say that, but I really do think, at least for people like me, who've always been into stuff like fantasy and betting, I do think we're changing things. And I think that, you know, leaving a mark on something that I care about, you know, it's been many, many years where people who wanted to bet had to either go to Vegas or they had to go on illegal websites in the Caribbean or wherever else. And now all of a sudden you can do it in the light of day in so many states. And I think a lot of people really appreciate that. I've had a lot of people who say, thank you for, you know, driving this industry and for making this happen. Even though we didn't do it all on our own, I'd like to think we played a part.
Do you just not join fantasy leagues because you don't want to deal with the banter? Like, yeah, I know I'm the DraftKings guy. You beat me. Good one. And but I mean, like, it just feels like heavy as a head.
You know what? I do actually. That is a little bit annoying, I have to be honest with you. So good call. I don't not play fantasy because of it, because I love fantasy so much. I have pared down the leagues, but not for that reason. More just I've been busy. I mean, I hate to admit this because it makes me sound like an even bigger sports dork, but there was one point, I think it was in college, where I was in over 100 leagues across, like, you know, 11 or 12 different sports one year. Now I'm in, you know, three, but I still enjoy it. And I still, every single Sunday, you know, that's my day. I definitely am checking the work stats and talking to my team on text message and all that too. But I'm also looking at the fantasy stuff. And, you know, my kids are starting to get into it too, which is awesome. I mean, I have a 7-year-old who's like a football fanatic. So much fun. The only thing is he doesn't understand red zone only applies when there's multiple games. When the playoff starts, he's like, Daddy, why can't we put on red zone? I'm like, no, you don't understand. There's no red zone. It's just one game. He's like, no, I get it. Put on red zone.
It sounds like you guys, though, the family likes some stuff that might be compulsive. 100 fantasy leagues. I think you guys need to snort adrenaline as a family together on Thanksgiving. 100 fantasy leagues? Are you crazy?
Well, that was me in college. That's not now. Now
he has 48.
Now it's only 3, believe it or not. But my kids haven't actually picked up fantasy yet. My oldest kid's 7, and although he does ask me at the beginning of every day, he's like, all right, who are we rooting for today? And what he means is go check where the money is on the different games. And about a year or so ago, he was like, all right, so we're rooting for this team. I'm like, well, no, that team, we kind of want them to win, but only by 4 points or less. And my wife just looks at me. She's like, you're not teaching our 6-year-old point spread, are you? And I'm like, yeah, actually, I am.
Damn right. what's your go-to fantasy team name?
You know, I try to keep it pretty simple now. I just call it Team J-Robs. I think if I try to come up with anything funny, it just seems lame. And so, or it's something that, you know, people are like, really? Why'd you name it that? And they start thinking there's some deeper meaning in it. So I went away from that. I used to have a bunch of different names, though. I do sometimes change my team name during the year, depending on how we're doing. I had one team that was horrible this year, so I changed the name to, I rotated between New York Jets and Jacksonville Jaguars and Detroit Lions for the team name during the year. And I hope I didn't offend any fans of the Jets or Jaguars.
Jesus,
or Lions
just nothing but terrible teams, yeah, just awful. Truly dreadful teams. Yeah. And also, you're not trying at all with the names. No. Like, you're just
Team J-Rob. Come on,
not anymore.
Raise your game.
It's why presidents wear the same color tie. He's
decision
a CEO
fatigue.
Decision fatigue. He doesn't need to be bothered with a fantasy.
People are going to give me a hard time about winning, or they're going to. What do you think they're going to do in terms of asking me about my team names? I can't get creative. I just got to go straight down the middle.
Jason's Lobos would be a good name.
You want to explain to the audience what it is, why it is we're in business together. And I should tell people, incidentally, we've been telling you, go to FloridaEducationChampions.com to sign a petition to bring sports betting to Florida. This is a fight I want to get into with Jason Robbins because I want to understand what it is that's going on here. But why are we in business together?
Well, I do want to talk a little bit about the Florida Initiative, but to answer your question, first, I'm a big fan. As I said, I grew up reading your column. I, loved your ESPN show. I thought it was just so creative and, you know, so refreshing given, just trying new stuff. And I loved it. And when I heard you were teaming up with John Skipper, who is also a very dear friend, John's a great guy, known him for many years. He and I have a very close relationship. Between being a big fan of yours and also John being a very close friend, this is just a perfect partnership for us. And look at what you guys are doing. I know you're just getting started, but wow, congrats. You've had so much amazing success in such a short period of time already.
How did you guys go? And we will get to the FloridaEducationChampions.com petition because it's one of the reasons that he's on with us here.
It does seem like it's working out. On Sunday, we walked into the studio and there was poop water
Yeah, there was sewage water coming in through the vents, but I don't think that's his fault.
No, it's not your fault, but you should put it on your radar.
Really? You want to put it on his radar that we need some help with the poop water?
He already stepped up to the plate once. I might as well try out my
You begin by asking him for money. This is where you say, before you said hello, really, you were asking for money, and now you're complaining about poop water?
Well, water.
There's a lot of people that want to ask the question, is he you back? And not a lot of people helping the U back. And it's just, you know, Jason, we need you and Jeff Bezos, who I've been told is a University of Miami. Look, I'm out here in these streets in Texas A&M and Alabama. It's something serious. All right. It is a rock fight. All right. We need all of the Jason Robbins and Jeff Bezos money we can find. All right. I got some NIL proposals. Just back channel with me after the interview.
Jason, why get into the content game, though? What is interesting to you about the content game?
Well, there's obviously so much overlap with what we do and, you know, with our sports betting and fantasy businesses, you know, and it's both sides of the equation. People read a lot of content and listen to a lot of content, watch a lot of content to know what's going on and to know which players to pick and which teams to bet on. And then when they make those bets or play those fantasy games, they watch the games more. I know for myself, I went from, you know, watching my favorite teams growing up. It was the Dolphins and Canes, and now, you know, it's the Patriots. And, you know, I think those were really the teams I watched before I got into fantasy. And then I got into fantasy and I wanted to watch everything. I knew the names of the backup running backs on every team. So it just really deepens the engagement. It makes every game interesting. So there's just a lot of natural overlap. There's a real flywheel that gets created between the content side and the fantasy and sports betting side. And we feel like partaking in both pieces, it's really about reaching our customer in, you know, a full sort of day, right? Our customer is spending a lot of time playing the fantasy games and betting on sports, but they're also spending a lot of time listening to your show and things like that. And we want to be involved in all aspects and engage our customers as much as possible. And, you know, that's really the goal.
Exactly how hard is it to actually get legalized in individual states? Because in this union of ours, everybody plays by different rules, and you're obviously clear in a lot of states. I know New York was a big one that happened over the weekend, but you're playing by different rules and different local governments, and it's got to be such a headache to familiarize yourself with all the proper protocol and just try to be active in a single state.
We have a great government affairs team. They work hard. They work in conjunction with our communications team very closely. But every state's different. We have a saying at the company, every state's a snowflake. They're all different. You know, some of them you go straight through the legislature, like what we did in New York. Others, like Florida, you have to go to the ballot. And I know you mentioned this earlier, but we're, you know, it's a really down to the wire situation in Florida. We have another week or two to gather signatures, and we're close, but we're not there yet. And I think it's going to be really down to the last moment. So anybody who wants to see sports betting in Florida, wants to be able to play on apps like DraftKings and, you know, others that they know and feel familiar with. And also, by the way, this if we are able to get Florida to legalize sports betting, we're going to generate hundreds of millions of dollars for education through tax revenue. So not only is it going to be great for people who want to bet, but also it's going to help a really good cause. And the way you do this is you go to FloridaEducationChampions.com. You could do one of two things. One, if you're worried about, because it is down to the wire, getting in on time, you can print out a ballot, a petition, sign it, and put a stamp on it and mail it back in. If you go there today, there's probably still time, though, to request one sent to you. If we send it to you, we'll include the postage. So all you have to do is sign it, pop it in the mail, and send it back. But we really need every last signature. I'm worried we're not going to get there. It's going to be really close. So please, everybody, go to FloridaEducationChampions.com and get your name and get your signature on there. We need it.
They're not making it easy with this whole mailing it back and forth thing, and instead of just being able to click something.
I think that's sort of the point, though.
Yeah.
I know. They make it, you know, it's got to be a wet signature, as they say. And, you know, you also, we have people all over the state outside of grocery stores and things like that. So if you happen to see somebody who's gathering signatures, you can also just go sign on the spot too. But, you know, if you want to make sure you do it, you got to go download or like I said, request it, get sent in the mail to you on FloridaEducationChampions.com. But you're right. They don't make it easy. I think they want to make sure that there's real intent. And also, you know, governments aren't exactly always caught up with the latest and greatest on technology. There's still a lot of things, believe it or not, that happen on physical, you know, written paper. And you would think, you know, when you go to visit the Facebook headquarters, everything in, or DraftKings headquarters, you check in on the iPad and everything's digital. When I go visit most government buildings, I have to sign in on a piece of paper. And that's pretty much, you know, par for the course, I think.
Jason, I need to, because government talk, I don't need to tell you this if you grew up listening to us, government talk is a good way for me to get the entire audience to tune out. So go ahead and get the fanfare mic. I'm going to ask Jason Robbins, I'm going to throw him off balance here by just asking top three moments for him as DraftKings CEO, because I want to get into when the leagues and the commissioners and Silver started putting their name on, we're going to allow gambling. I don't know if it's in the top three, but once sports legitimized you, once sports was no longer scared of gambling, I want to know if that's in the top three. So we're going to start with number three. You got to rank these. I know we haven't prepped you for this in any way. So you got to go 3, 2, 1, biggest sort of aha, okay, we've got something going here with DraftKings that's going to be able to make a splash. Number three.
Oh, wow. You are putting me on the spot.
Splash.
I'd say number three was going public during the pandemic. You know, that was quite a moment. And number three, I know. Well, see, you didn't prep me, so I might not get the order right. I might regret the order I put them
in. But what happened there? Explain to me what happened during the pandemic. We won't hold you to it. Everyone knows that this is scattershot and we're just throwing a bunch of feces in your face.
Just like the studio.
Yes, that's right.
Just like being in the studio. So we decided in late 2019, we were in the process of acquiring a company that was going to give us our sports betting technology. And we decided to do it through a special purpose acquisition company, which was, you know, at the time, not that common. Then it became incredibly common. And we were all set to go, you know, everything was great. And all of a sudden, you know, we were supposed to go in early April. And then March 11th hit, sports shut down, and all of a sudden the markets were tanking and said, wow, you know, we've had some bad luck, but this one might be the worst. And then all of a sudden, you know, a week or two later, things turned around and we said, let's go. So we took the company public. It was really strange because I had this vision that we were going to go ring the bell at the NASDAQ and everybody's going to be in person celebrating. And instead it was everybody over Zoom. And so it was a little bit of a weird one. And we had, you know, like I said, we were buying this company. So I had this idea I was going to go and visit all their offices, and all of a sudden everything shut down. But everyone pulled together, and amazingly, we just, you know, we powered through it. And it's been a wild ride, even though we've only been public a little over a year and a half now. So that's number three.
Number two,
I think probably number two would be, you know, you referenced this in a way, when we did our first league deal, which was with Major League Baseball. And all of a sudden I was like, wow, you know, leagues are getting behind daily fantasy sports. And then eventually they got behind sports betting. And that's when I knew it was here to stay. I mean, because, you know, that was always the source of the opposition. If you look at why that Supreme Court, the law that the Supreme Court struck down happened in the first place, it was because the leagues were pushing for it back in the early 90s. And you know, the leagues for decades, I mean, for almost 100 years, going back to the days of the Chicago Black Sox scandal, have been against this sort of stuff. And to see this new wave of commissioners with, you know, Adam Silver and Roger Goodell and Manfred and Bettman and all these, you know, Jay Monahan at the PGA, all these just, you know, forward thinking guys that are saying, hey, why are we against this? Our fans are doing it. Why do we want them doing it on offshore books when we could be doing it in a legal regulated, you know, out in the light, and we could be partnering with them? And it's a core part of what engages our fans. And so that was a special moment. And then I'd say the first moment.
Hold on a second. Where our timing, right, Mike, he gave down. You the spot after Major League early on. He gave you the spot and you were too respectful of the CEO is what happened. You didn't go with comedy. You were scared to interrupt him.
Quick bites here, Jason. Quick bites.
And well, this, yes, we give you one sentence, and this is big one right here. This is number one.
It's Trajan Bandy's pick six against Notre Dame, right?
Here is number one, according to Jason Robbins, the big good luck moment of like, okay, our business is going to be sailing from here is
when we were under, you know, I mentioned earlier that regulatory pressure, and Virginia, which was the first state to do it, there ended up being dozens, passed a law regulating fantasy sports. And it was more of a sigh of relief moment where I was like, all right, there's going to be at least one state in the country that we're going to be able to operate. That's great. And then, you know, many more did it after that.
All right. Again, we remind you, FloridaEducationChampions.com. We got to work on our timing. It's our first time, though. It's always awkward the first time.
Yeah, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, we will talk
to you. Are we doing a good job? Just out of curiosity.
If we were together in person, you could be kicking me under the table. That's one of the COVID issues, right?
Did you notice?
If you were in person, I'd be getting some money under the table.
Oh, for the love of God.
I'd be securing the services of all the St.
Michael
Thomas Aquinas.
Really has just got a one-track mind, doesn't he?
Really, I got to bring you back. Really, I asked myself, much like you in 2020, I was like, what am I going to do to get in the game? And very clearly, it's under the table NIL deals. That's my calling.
Chris Cody, how are you feeling about the fact that Jason Robbins had already said that he was only in three fantasy leagues? Now, you weren't listening. You accused him of 48 fantasy leagues now, and he corrected you and said three, and that's the only interaction you two have had.
I don't feel great about it. You know, I just was trying to be like, you know, exaggerate the point a little.
Yeah, but you weren't listening. Right. You clearly weren't. You clearly and obviously weren't listening.
You know, I noticed Jason didn't put the big mega deal with the Levitard show in his top three. I wonder where that might rank.
Is
that
like four?
Number 45? Or
We got a little more time to prove this one out and make it number one.
All right.
Can you go through real quick before we let you go? And again, a reminder, FloridaEducationChampions.com. You sign a petition if you want sports betting to come to Florida. Greg just wants to hear some more about how you read his columns growing up.
I appreciate that. And also I think I heard you mentioned earlier you're a big fan of the Greg Cody Show podcast. Oh, I wanted to.
That's not what he mentioned.
He'd never said that.
He doesn't know what that is. He did not mention that. He did not.
But I feel like in the category of missed opportunities, Jason, at off air, I want to put you together with my business team, my pod business team, because I feel like that's a real opportunity for DraftKings.
How much of this
not
do
a
you
part
get,
of Levitard
Jason?
And friends.
Jason, people come up to you and they just see money, right? Just about people come up to you. They can't be
How
this
dare
brazen.
You?
They can't.
How dare
they
you?
Can't be this overt where they're just like, "Hey, can I have money?" But you're getting 100 requests like that a day, correct?
You know, Dan, not everyone has as much integrity as you. A lot of people are just thank you for the money.
Thank you. Dan took $50 million from you.
That's true. Yeah. Well, you know what? That's a good point. That's a very good
and
point.
And just talked to you for a half hour about FloridaEducationChampions.com because we want sports betting to come to Florida because all of this fills Stugatz's pockets. Like, Stugatz, the more money that's being made in Florida, I don't know how this fight works. I don't know the specifics of it, and I don't know if we drown in the details, but to fight Native Americans and the Seminole Indian tribe on gambling, what has that process been like?
Well, we're not looking to fight with anybody. I mean, in fact, the ballot initiative that we're trying to get on the ballot in 22 in November, that would include the ability for Seminoles or anyone to offer sports betting. So we're trying to create an inclusive market where everyone can operate and the best products will win and customers will have the choice of what they want to play and they'll be able to pick. And so we're not really trying to fight anybody. I know that, you know, at least in Florida for a long time, there's been, a very sort of monopolistic type of setup with casinos and things like that. We view this as different, but our goal is certainly not to get into a fight with anyone. Our goal is to open it up and let the customer make the choice.
Well, but you mentioned that FanDuel tried to end you guys, right? And
that was back in the daily fantasy days. That was, you know, it feels like a lifetime ago, back in like 2013 and 14. We actually have a great relationship with FanDuel now. We do this together with them. They're actually tag teaming with us on this ballot initiative. So two of us are co-funding it. So we have a great relationship with FanDuel now. We have a lot of respect for what they built. And, I think we work very well together on these types of things.
But you did point out that you got bigger than them.
And fantasy, yeah. I mean, they're definitely doing great on the sports betting side, and so are we. But, fantasy was a battle. I think fantasy was a bit different because both of us were startups at the time, and it felt like there's only room for one. And it was a battle to raise money from investors. But times have changed now, and I think we're in a different situation. We collaborate very well with that team over there now. They're a great group, and we have a lot of respect for them.
Jason, good meeting you, sir. Look forward to doing business together in the future.
Thanks so much. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate you having me on.
And I'm sorry for Mike Ryan.
We'll be in touch.
Yeah, Mike's the worst. Can I interest you in a Fighting Irish NIL deal?
What's the matter with you guys? Get out of here!
Ooh.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.